accession number 10421, reel 9.
Mr. Leslie Thornton, Reel 9. You were telling me about the training that you were doing in Willington. Were you digging trenches?
No. What we did do, actually, we did do a few roadblocks, sandbags, so that you blocked half a road off. So that anything... this was, I think, primarily in case of an invasion of the country. So this happened, I should think, in a lot of places where these roadblocks were built. Just sandbags and half of the road. Otherwise, the training went on as normal.
What were your feelings about the type of recruit you were getting?
Well, to my mind, they were all good lads. There's no doubt about it. They knew what they were in for. I wouldn't say they liked it, but they knew what the form was, and they just knuckled down to it. I was very surprised at the number of the absentees. The absenteeism wasn't very great at all.
You didn't have a great deal of trouble with any of them.
Not a lot. Only the odd one, which were going absent and. Not a lot. They knew it was obviously knew it was useless to do. They had to do the job, and that was it.
So they came the view that they were being trained to fight.
Oh yeah,
and had to get on with it.
Oh, without a doubt, yes. Mm.
How did these recruits take to discipline after civilian life?
No trouble with them at all. I mean, I think they realised that they had to do what they were told. A war had started, and they would know that the punishment in a war would be more severe than it would be in peacetime. You see, the thing had changed, was written on a charge sheet in peacetime, was such things as having a dirty rifle. That was it. When the war started, there was something in front of that. Whilst on active service, deserting His Majesty's forces, or whilst on active service, being absent so and so and so and so. Everything was whilst on active service.
For which the punishment was much more severe.
Which was more severe.
Did you have any duties? Were they being trained for any duties?
No, not really. The fire picket, the odd fire picket. And of course, there were still the odd fatigues. We had the ATS there who were doing the cooking. In the dining halls for our food.
What about the officers? What officers did you have there?
Well, I can't remember the names now. I think we had was an old officer called Rathbone, who used to play the piano in the pub. Old 14 war man. I can't remember the others because I wasn't there a great length of time. I just remember the sergeant major and the sergeants, of course. One of the sergeants actually was a Willington chap out of the 6th Battalion. There's no more duties. You hadn't a duty, see, that's the point. They were more concerned about training them and getting them away to fill the spaces up in a battalion.
What was the food like?
Oh, it's quite good. It was clean, of course, but wholesome. I wouldn't say it was enough. The lads used to go out, as you probably realised, that there wasn't a lot of food about, even in cafes. But you could go to a cafe and get a cup of tea and a cake or something like that, which they did do.
And they ate, was there just one eating?
Yes,
they
had it, like a dining hall. It was in a, it was in a big hall. It's some institute. I can't remember exactly where it was. It was laid out with the tables and everything.
And you said, as you've said, they were well received by the civilians and taken into their homes.
You realise that, you had Usher Moore, you had Esh Winning, you had New Brunsworth, you had Brunsworth itself, you had Langley Park. All these villages round about had companies, each with their sergeant major and their officers.
And about how many men to a company? At this stage,
well, it was a recruit company. You probably have 5 or 6 squads of 24, which is 100, you see, which is the normal complement of a company of Italian, really.
And
it was enough to it was enough men to handle for administration, put it that way.
And they were able to get experience of all the weapons.
Oh yes, we. They used to go out into quarries to fire, and you'd put a red flag up on top of the quarry, and put a soldier in certain places to stop any civilians from going there, and all the precautions, the safety precautions that were in peacetime, where there was red flags all over, it was measured how far a bullet would go, all that had gone. This was in a quarry, and you just fired in an old quarry and fired.
And you still had the anti-gas precautions and training.
You didn't do a lot. No, they were forgotten. They were compulsory to carry. The gas masks were compulsory. It was a chargeable offence not to carry a gas mask. But you didn't do much of it. I think later on they were never carried.
Fitness training. Were they in fitness training?
That was done. With your. Along the roads with your kit on and your rifle and your doublet. That was your training.
Well, you weren't in PE kit.
Well, you didn't know. You had it, but you probably went for a run now and again with the squad. But there was no such thing as the horse and the parallel bars and doing handsprings. That had gone.
But you would go on route marches?
Oh, you go on route marches, oh yes. Same kind of thing.
What kind of distances were you marching?
Oh, just up to 5 miles.
Carrying any extra kit to what you did?
No, just the same.
Specialist training. Was any specialist training going on?
There was a company. There was a company, a specialist company in. I think it probably was Esh Winning. There was this company, and they did their specialist work there. I was never there, so I don't know what went on.
Were you trying to instill in the recruits a pride and loyalty?
Well, I think it was there. I mean, the Geordie, Durham, and the surrounding areas, they are loyal, I think, to their own have been. And I think they still are. There's still a lot of argument about the change of the county boundaries now. Where people used to be Durham and now are born in Cleveland or something like that. So.
And these were the militiamen that you were receiving?
No, no.
You're into conscription
these
now.
These are now conscription.
Were any there who obviously did not want to be there and showed it in some way or other?
Not many. No, I can't give you any particular case where. where it is, it was shown, that showed a lot.
They seem to be quite enthusiastic. Same,
well, I'll say they were resigned to it.
So you were at Wellington how long?
from November to the January. Oh, one thing I forgot to tell you, that I wasn't promoted full sergeant when I came back. I was a land sergeant. Well, a land sergeant really did the job of a corporal. The full sergeant was in charge. That rank no longer exists in the British Army except for the Guards. The Guards still have a Land Sergeant.
And did you have three stripes?
Yes, three stripes, yes. But actually, he's a full corporal. But that only exists in the Guards now. So, but I was posted to Spennymoor because I was promoted to full sergeant. And I was promoted to Spennymoor to take charge of a squad of recruits.
And this would be on similar lines to Willington and Ishamore and all the other places?
Exactly the same. I went there and found that one of my mates was there as a sergeant who I was at the depot with. And we just carried on. I got a squad of my own and just carried on training on the streets, the same. Building roadblocks. I remember I had the squad out building a roadblock, and up came, this one in the afternoon, and up came the bookie of Spennymoor, Jimmy Brown, I called him, and the policeman coming along. Jimmy Brown went to the policeman and said, open the pub. So the policeman said, right, open the pub. Right, a pint for all the lads and whatever the officer wants to drink. So up it came, a pint for all the lads I had there, and probably a whiskey or something like that. That was the attitude of the civil population. Now, I was, my squad was in the Temple Hall. Now, straight across the road from the Temple Hall was a china shop. It was an old chapel who had been in the 14th War. And every night, he used to say, come in, Sergeant. I'd go into his shop, into his house. His wife would be preparing big jugs of tea to take over to my platoon across the road, while I would be having a beer or something in his house with him and telling me all about the 14th War.
And that wouldn't have happened before the war?
Oh, not. And then we used to have, off we'd go to our range, which was another quarry called, in Spennymoor, called, it was named Nanny Goat's Castle. And we used to march to it with our kit and rifle and ammunition would come up separate, of course. And we'd do our training at Nanny Goat's Castle, our firing at Nanny Goat's Castle. And our route marches round about the area of Spennymoor. We had, of course, any parade, big parade that the Sergeant Major wanted, or the company commander, would hold on Spennymoor Park, which was near the Spennymoor Drill Hall.
Were you getting any opportunity for sport?
Not a lot. I remember playing a game of football. I have a photograph, as a matter of fact, of the NCOs in football, well, a kind of football kit, you know what I mean, a white vest and blue shorts, and that we played on the park at one time. But, that's a lot of those blokes, I'm afraid, have gone now, dead. But, we didn't get a lot of chance. There wasn't the facilities.
Do you recall which battalions of the regiment most of your recruits were going to when they were through their training?
Oh, yes. It'd be the 2nd, 6th, 8th, and 9th. And I should think the 11th and the 10th. There was at one time 5 battalions of DLI in the line at the same time in France. That could have been on the 2nd Front, of course. But the 2nd Battalion were there up till Dunkirk, and then until they went to Burma. So that's where the recruits would go to. And of course, and your territory battalions had gone. 6th, 8th and 9th were definitely there.
And how long were you at Spennymoor?
Till June.
About 6 months.
I met my wife there, matter of fact.
At this time?
Yes, she worked in a little tea shop that we used to go into for our cup of tea on a morning, and she was serving behind the counter. And I met her there and asked her to go at the pictures, and then later on, of course, we got married.
That would be after the war, were you married?
No, I was married during the war.
Before you went abroad?
Before I went abroad, yes.
So you started your courting then?
Yes, in 1940.
Hmm. Have you any other recollections of Spennymoor?
Well, not a lot really. I'm afraid I can't remember a great deal about except the training part of it. But, nothing happened. Yes, we did do something. We were confined to camp. I think it was round about the Dunkirk time. And we were confined to camp, and we were in Alderman Wraith School at the time. And we couldn't get out. We were stuck there for a week. And of course, on a Sunday, they allowed the girlfriends or the wives, if there were any, to come and sit on the grounds of Alderman Wraith to have a chat.
What was the feelings of the men around you when Dunkirk came?
Well, it was... we were overawed because all the soldiers that came back from Dunkirk, loads of them came to Spennymoor, and they were in their rags, had the bayonets, they would pull a bayonet out full of blood and show us it. And they were wild, really. They wouldn't change the clothes. They walked about into the pub with a dirty uniform on and boots, until of course they were allowed to, because they'd been had such a rough time that they gave them a little bit of leeway until they settled down, and then they were all kitted out, fresh kit, and posted away again to the various battalions they belonged to. They probably all didn't belong to the DLR, you see. It could have been all different regiments, all farmed together and sent in to get kitted out.
And they were billeted with you, or in...
No, not the same place. No, not in the same place. It created a bad impression, you see, really, to the recruit.
But you did get the opportunity to talk to them.
Yes, but I can't remember, really. All they were doing is was telling their experience and trying to say how good they were and whatnot after being thrown out of Dunkirk.
So the army used a little bit of psychology and gave them a little time to settle
down.
That's
right, to settle down before they kitted them all out and got them away. See, as soon as they were kitted out and they were in the uniforms, clean and all that, they more or less forgot about this thing.
And do you recall the area at Dunkirk time? Was there a kind of any defeatist?
There was a depression. People were depressed. And said in their minds then was the invasion of this country, without a doubt. And of course the preparations started, and more roadblocks went up, all signs, road signs taken down, and things like that. So it was expected, really, that it would be near hand, an invasion would be imminent.
And you were involved with more and more roadblock act. You weren't called out onto any invasion scares of any kind.
No, but I was called out on one job. I took a squad of men in a 3-ton to Finkel Abbey. Now, in Finkel Abbey, hidden a host of 4.5 and 3.7 ACAC shells. All in Finkel Abbey. Now they were frightened, so I had to go with these men, and we had to move all this ammunition, and we spread it all around the in little heaps, all around the woods around Newcastle area in Finkel Abbey. We had a map. We had maps. We had an officer with us. We had maps, and we stacked them. We were all stacked in the open, these ACAC shells, away from the abbey. Because they expected a bomb dropping on that, and the whole lot would go up.
The people around you say were depressed. There was no panic of
no,
any kind.
No, there wasn't any panic. No,
it didn't affect your relationships with the civilians.
No. It made them closer, I think, to us. You know.
What was the state of your equipment at this time? I'm thinking in terms of your weapons and the support weapons. Were you being well equipped?
No, we even had rifles called P-17s, which were a Canadian rifle issued of our own SMLEs. the rifle that we had, the 14 war rifle, really, the 08 Batten, wasn't enough for them.
And SMLE is a...
It's a British rifle.
What do the letters stand for?
Small, short Lee Enfield. Number one, Mark III.
You didn't lose any of your weapons to troops coming back from Dunkirk when they were re-equipped?
No. As I said, we got these weapons and we didn't like them really, these P-17s. It wasn't, in our mind, it wasn't a British rifle. It was a foreign thing.
Was there any scares of parachutists? Or?
Not really, no. No, there wasn't at the time.
Enemy air activity?
They started to put poles in the fields, in the farmers' fields. And, of course, they used to say the farmer got so much per pole. He may have done, because it stopped him from ploughing properly. And these were for aircraft landing, to stop aircraft landing. You could see them in all the fields, these posts, every so often in the farmers' field.
Did you have any involvement with the Home Guard in the area?
No. Well, we didn't see them. No, we didn't see them at all.
So you come to June and you're about to move again.
Yes. Well, what happened, one of our... A chap that I was at the depot with, a corporal, who was then by the sergeant, was posted to this special training centre, and he'd been married, and of course he didn't like it and came crying down to the commanding officer, who was Colonel McBain, and said he wanted to come back to his unit. So I had been on, I think it was High this time, not Bisley, High the first time, and he said, well, there's a job up at this place. I want you to take it, because your experience up to a place in Scotland called Loch Islet, which was 21 miles from nowhere and 18 miles the other place from nowhere, actually near Fort William, 21 miles from Fort William and 18 miles from Malaig, in the heart of the mountains. I got there, and there was Nissen huts, and all the instructors in one hut, no bunks, anything like that. One hut for the sergeant's mess. And I wondered what I was putting myself in for.
How did they receive you?
Well, the instructors were the same as myself. They were some of them were called up, had been called from the TA. One in the London Rifle Brigade, territorial, you see. Another one from the Royal Fusiliers, territorial. Another reservist sergeant, myself, the one out the South Wales Borders. So I had the Rifle Brigade, the South Wales Borders, one DLI, one Welsh Fusilier, one Leicester. There was actually seven of us. And this place, a special training centre. And we were there to train commandos in weapons. But it didn't end at that. We had then all ammunition was, you could just go and get a handful. We had it in the barrack rooms, we had it all over, grenades. Everything was live ammunition. Anti-tank rifle, everything was live. And we had, they arrived on the staff, two civilians. Both ex-commissioners of the Shanghai Police, Americans. One was a judo black belt, and the other was an expert pistol shot. He was about 60, 65, white haired, and the other was, the judo one was a chap about 49. And we had to go in the course of instruction of close combat with them. And they taught us judo, close combat, how to fire the Tommy gun, and the pistol. This old man could put six shots in a pistol in 6 seconds at a running target. The other oldest fella, the judo, he could just, well, nobody could beat him. Some of the officers tried to throw him downstairs once. The officers finished downstairs, not him. And we went on a course with them to teach these commandos chaps. Knives, went on a course with a knife, how to use a knife, everything. And they had experience of these things in Shanghai and places like that. So before we started on our training, we had to learn all this.
You had to undergo quite a bit of training yourself.
Yes, and then we had a QMSI there, belonged to the small arms school, and we had to pass out again, all of us again on our weapons, to see that we, and then we started to get these commandos in. Well, at that time they weren't called commandos, they were called special service units and independent companies, and they came and we taught them all these particular things.
Before we go on to that train, can I just speak to you a little bit more about the camp itself? You said it was Nissenhuts.
The officers' quarters was the castle. It was called Inverila Castle, and it belonged to the Cameron Heads, the Scots people. They still lived in there in a cottage. They had their odd cow and things like that. And as I say, the officers' mess and the officers slept in the castle. We had our Nissenhuts, where all the instructors were in one hut. Sergeant majors, sergeants, and then the students, of course, occupied the other huts.
And how many would the camp hold?
I should say about 60, 70. We had a sergeant's mess, a wooden hut, and there was a canteen, nappy girls there, right in the wilds. I can't remember where they were put up, the nappy girls. I think they were put into houses somewhere, because it was a very dangerous thing to have these chaps living in the wilds like that. Training, really hard training. I should think that we seven were the fittest sergeants in the British Army at the time, because everything was done at the double, and it was one of the wettest, biggest, wettest parts of the British Isles, Lough Island or Inverness at the time, and it didn't matter what it was doing, raining. We worked in gum boots and gas capes. If it wasn't raining, we were still wet because we'd be through the river. All life stuff was climbing ropes across the river. Somebody would throw a sticky tank bomb in the river. Up we would go, shake the rigging that we were climbing on. And we, as instructors, had to do this. All these obstacles, we had to do it to show these chaps through it.
Was the food good?
Not enough. We were on what they called high altitude rations, and it wasn't enough. So what they did, they built a special nappy for the sergeants. You see, the men had a nappy. Men always have a nappy. The sergeant's mess. In the mess hall, you could always go to a nappy, have anything extra if you had the money to get it. Well, the sergeants couldn't, so they built a special hut for the sergeants to go. And of course, we used to go and have dinners at night.